Part 3. The Wolf. Chapter 9. For most of the afternoon, Lulu has waited on the lake in the inflatable kayak. The others he knows will approach by land. Kimball will call on the sat phone when they are all in place. Lulu has only one responsibility in the operation ahead. Make certain no one tries to escape on the water. He has never been on Iron Lake, and he appreciates the beauty of it, though it's too populated for his taste. He prefers lakes where there's nothing on the shoreline but the rocks and trees put there by the hand of nature. Under the warming sun of early May, he imagines what the lake must have been like before the white people arrived and built their cabins, their town. He does this a lot, this daydreaming of a time before everything was ruined. Useless, he knows. But then so much of what a human being does every day is, in the end, useless. Or rather, he thinks, idling in his kayak, pointless. He was pleased when Kimball assigned him to cover the avenue of escape by water. It meant he would spend as little time as possible with the others and would afford him the opportunity to enjoy a long, solitary paddle. He has lately been too much in the company of men he despises, too much in the company of human beings, period. Alone in the sanctuary of nature, that's where he belongs. But circumstances dictate otherwise. And so here he is, in an inflatable kayak with a Weatherby meat-eater he uses in all his operations, a rifle he trusts. Trust has always been an issue with him, which makes him think of Kimball just as the sat phone, silenced for this operation, vibrates. Execute is the only word Kimball offers. Lulu lifts his paddle and makes for the birches and aspens that line the shore of the finger of land the locals call Crow Point. He's been told only what he needs to know. Kimball keeps everything close to his vest, and all Kimball has said is that no one leaves the point. "How many are there?" Herring had asked as they prepared for the assault. "I don't know," Kimball had answered. "At least two, but maybe more." "Will they put up a fight?" McHugh had asked. "What do you care, Leo? You're hired to fight if you have to." "Itching for a fight, in fact," McHugh had said. Except for Kimball, Lulu knew none of the others before they gathered for this mission. He's worked with Kimball before. He doesn't like the man, but the operations he brings Lulu in on always pay well. Despite McHugh's desire for action, Kimball has cautioned them that the woman is not to be harmed. "What about the Indian?" Herring asked before they split up. "This Malu," Kimball said. "Expendable." "And if there are others?" McHugh looked eager. "No witnesses. But if you kill the woman, I'll gut you myself." They know what the woman looks like. Kimball gave them all a copy of her photograph, a pretty redhead with green eyes and a winning smile. But Lulu has no idea of her importance in the operation as a whole. His job at the moment is to help seal this isolated point of land. At the shore, he turns the kayak broadside and disembarks onto a flat rock, one of many that line the edge of the clear water. He lifts his rifle, slips the sling over his shoulder, and draws the inflatable onto the rock. When the mission is finished, he'll kayak back the way he came. It may be deep night by then, but he is often navigated by the stars, and the dark doesn't bother him at all. He glides among the trees whose trunks are white and whose leaves on this May afternoon as the sun is just about to set are deep green. The color reminds Lulu of the eyes of the woman in the photograph. He can see cabins, two of them. One is ancient but sturdy-looking. The other is newer, yet still of a simple log design. There's also an outhouse. He sees no electric lines, nothing that suggests the modern world has encroached here, And despite the grim possibilities of the mission, the scene gives him a pleasant feeling. He remains hidden among the trees, waiting until the others close in. Beyond the cabins is an open meadow, and beyond that a line of pines where the deep woods begin. On the west side of the meadow rise two rock outcroppings. A well-worn path leads toward them from the cabins. He sees no people. There's no smoke coming from the stovepipe on the roof of either cabin. The scene looks deserted. A smile plays on his lips. Kimball, he thinks, has finally stumbled. The others appear, moving cautiously toward the cabins. Kimball and Herring check the first cabin, the newer one. McHugh kicks open the door on the ancient-looking cabin. Lulu joins them just as Herring is checking the outhouse. "Nothing," McHugh says with disgust. "Where the hell are they?"
"There's a path to those rocks," Lulu says. "I'll check there."
Kimball gives him a nod of approval, and Lulu follows the path to the outcroppings. Beyond, he finds a stone ring filled with the ash and char of many fires. For pleasure, council fires, ceremonies. He spots a small hut-like structure up the shoreline and heads there. Even before he reaches the sweat lodge, he knows exactly what it is. He's done many sweats. Near the lodge is the ash and char from a recent fire, which he knows was used to heat the grandfathers, the stones that were placed in the center of the lodge. A blanket still drapes the door. He uses the barrel of his Weatherby to push it aside. The lodge is empty, but he can still feel residual heat. He returns to the cabins where the other men are arguing.
"Someone tipped them off," McHugh is saying. "They knew we were coming."
"No one tipped them off," Kimball says. "No one knew we were coming."
"That fat-ass Fredericks knew," Herring throws in. "I told you he was too soft for this mission."
"He's the best communications man I know," Kimball says. "We need his ears and eyes. He didn't give us away, Mike."
"Yeah, well, somebody did."
Mike Herring looks at McHugh.
"You disappeared last night." "Where the hell did you go?"
"To do your mama. She was good, but not the best I've ever had."
Herring grabs for McHugh, but Kimball intervenes. While the argument has gone on, Lulu has knelt and has been studying the ground. The daily comings and goings at the cabins have worn the ground bare, and mostly the area is loose dirt. Lulu is trying to read the prints left there. He can see the tracks made by his cohorts, large boot prints. Among them are the smooth prints of moccasin soles, and also the prints from a boot too small to be one of the men. He rises, sorts the tracks in his thinking, carefully follows the moccasin prints and the small boot prints to the edge of the meadow. They don't lead onto the path that cuts through the tall, wild grass, the path Kimball and Herring followed from a county road a couple of miles distant. Instead, the tracks separate and disappear into the meadow. He looks closely at the grass, which is waving slightly in an evening breeze that has come with sunset. He smiles, understanding what he sees. If they'd stayed together, they would have trampled enough grass to be easily followed. Separating, they have done their best to complicate things. Useless, because he will be able to find where they've bent and broken the grass stalks, but he admires the effort. He scans the distant tree line, looking for any sign that they might still be hiding, watching, and hoping the men will simply leave.
"Three,"
he says, without turning back.
"What?"
Kimball says.
"There were three here. They left just before we came."
"Can you tell where they went?"
Kimball steps up beside Lulu and looks where he looks.
"Into the woods."
"To hide?"
"Maybe. Or maybe they plan on going deeper. You know what's out there, not far away."
"What?"
"The Boundary Waters."
"Boundary Waters? What the hell is that?"
Herring says. He's the only American in the group. He's built like a linebacker,
And even if he didn't boast about being born and raised in Mississippi, it's easy enough to tell from his accent.
A million acre of trees and lakes and rivers and no people. In the States, they call it the Boundary Waters. There's another million acres just like it on the other side of the border. In Canada, we call it the Quetico.
You're a tracker, Lulu, Kimball says. One of the reasons you're here. Can you track them? Something in Lulu warms and expands, the great anticipation of a hunt. He nods once and says,
"It will be a pleasure."